Good evening. It is your girl, Dr. Shepherd, coming to you with
a note from the principal's desk. Let me tell you guys, you are in for a treat. You are in for a treat tonight. Tonight, I have two special guests joining me. These young men are assistant principals. They have been in the game for a few years. And let me tell you something. I am excited to jump in, to hear from them, to learn some things about some of the experiences that they've had. And I can guarantee you tonight's conversation is going to be so rich. So very rich. So please tune in. Also, if you miss it, your friends miss it, and you like, man, that was good. I want to get that sent over. Don't forget. Do not forget Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, and on Spotify. All right? So I'm going to go ahead and get started, guys. I want to introduce my special guests, and then I'm going to ask them to tell a little bit about themselves before we get down to the hard stuff, okay? All right. So I have with me Mr. Tyler Jones, who is an assistant principal and has been an assistant principal three years. All right. And then I have Mr. Leo Heath, who is also an assistant principal and has been for
2 years.
Awesome. Oh, this is going to be real good, y'all. All right. So, Mr. Jones, please tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay. So, my name is Tyler Jones. I am from Rocky Mount, North Carolina. I had the pleasure of attending North Carolina A&T State University, where I did receive my bachelor's degree in sports science and fitness management. I did get into education through a lateral entry pathway through Teach for America, and that's how I received my license to become a teacher. I also just completed my master's program this year at the University of North Carolina at Charlotte, and I received my master's in school administration to become a licensed school principal. So, yeah, that's a little bit about me. I've been in the field, again, this is year 8 in education in general for me.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And Mr. Heath.
All right. My name is Leo Heath Jr. I'm from Scotland Neck, North Carolina. I attended the University of North Carolina at Greensboro, class of 2019. I got into education's family background. Everybody was a teacher in some form. So upon graduation, I was introduced to KIPP Academy Charlotte, which is where I am now. Started as a teacher, did a pretty good job there, was recognized, got some opportunities to travel and learn a little bit more, and saw that I could potentially be a leader, became a dean for a year, had great success there, and that is how I landed into the role of assistant principal. So I am still pursuing further education to further my licenses to become certified to be a principal at some point.
Awesome. I love it. You hear that? All right. Well, I'm going to get ready to jump right on in with this first question, and it doesn't matter which one of you want to take it first, but I definitely want to hear from both of you. So what has your experience been like as a young Black leader in a school environment?
I'll jump in. It's been an interesting one. It's been challenging. It's been fun. But more than anything, it's been inspirational just for myself to see the impact that we have on a day-to-day basis, like on children, on our students, on our scholars every day. And with that, you know, the challenges that we overcome and that we help our students overcome, they're very rewarding in those moments. And it makes the work that we do that much more special. When the outcomes are achieved that we seek to achieve on a daily basis.
Oh, yeah, that's good. That's good. Thank you, Mr. Jones.
Yeah, definitely want to echo what Mr. Jones said. It definitely has its challenges, but it is exciting. It's rewarding to be able to do work for children and families who have similar backgrounds as myself. And I get to see myself in some of these scholars every day. And it's also rewarding to be able to help grow kids in the field of education. I think a lot of times people view it as kids are already at the level that they're supposed to be, but in reality, there are lots of gaps. Mm-hmm. And it's rewarding to be able to start with them in like sixth grade and see where they end up in eighth grade, mm-hmm. and continue some of those relationships as they matriculate up to high school and they're like, oh, Ms. Heath, I'm doing this. I'm taking AP classes this year, or I'm applying to colleges this year, which is my case this year. My first class is our seniors. So that's super exciting just to see the evolvement as they continue to grow. But definitely it has its challenges as well. Being young and being a manager of adults can be tricky at times, especially when you are younger than them in age. And so being a manager in that way can be difficult, but again, the reward is the reward at the end of the day. So it's still great.
I love it. I love that so much. And both of you actually in your responses mentioned challenges. And that actually leads me into our next question. What has or what are some challenges that you face as young Black professionals entering into leadership? And how did you overcome them?
I think similar to Mr. Heath shared and his response to the first question was, you know, a lot of times people have doubts. They question your ability. They question, like, your credentials. Do you have the ability to do the job itself? And for me, the way that I overcome it is I know my impact. I know the things that I've done, and I know the impact that I've had, you know, on students and the impact that I've had on families, right? And so I know that I wouldn't be in the position that I'm in if it wasn't for those things. And typically it's just a simple reminder of, like, I'm here for a reason, and it's not necessarily my plan, it's his plan. And so continuing to believe in that and just reminding myself to stay grounded here.
Come on, his plan. Y'all know that's my language right there, honey. Gonna always talk about God. I love it. Yeah, same to you, Mr. Eve.
Since I spoke on that challenge in the last question, I'll just speak on something different. I'm realizing that education is a sport of evolvement. Mm-hmm. And I came in when I was 22, 23, and now I'm 29. And even in that short span, I've had to adjust my leadership style, adjust my teaching style. Mm-hmm. Even in just these 7 years, like, kids are not the same as they were 7 years ago. So finding ways to, like, wake up and be innovative and be able to find ways to meet them where they are, to get them to where they need to be. That is something that I realized was a challenge for me towards the latter part of last year, like just trying to have certain conversations that I would have a few years ago, or make certain teacher moves that I did a few years ago that aren't working quite as well. Mm-hmm. And just finding ways to make those adjustments and do what needs to be done to get them.
Oh, I love that. I love that. It has definitely evolved. You know, this is year 19 for me. And as I think about, like, man, like, everything has changed except the curriculum, because what do? They just give it a new name. But just hearing you say that just brought back so much for my own self, just thinking about, like, wow, my first class, you know, they're growing with children now and in their own careers. But thank you to both of you for that. All right, so talking about scholars, how do you engage with scholars and staff about race and culture in ways that promotes understanding and unity? Because, you know, we are definitely in a very different time. Our history is trying to be erased. And so how do you, like, talk to scholars about their race, about unity, and get them involved in our culture?
I think the curriculum that we provide allows us to be able to do that. Being the English coach, like, we do a lot of reading. A lot of our texts are historically based. So, like, thinking about the curriculum for this year, we start off with Watsonville to Birmingham. So sixth graders will have the opportunity to see, like, what was it like when people from the South had to matriculate and move up to the North, and how those adjustments still weren't in their benefit. And in this case, the little boy, he doesn't know anything about the South, and going down and seeing, like, how different it is and how times were segregated. And we know that history does and can repeat itself. So I think it's really important for Black and brown scholars to have those conversations, because it is a chance that at some point in our lifetimes, in their lifetimes, that we might have to face some of those same challenges. And the only way that we're going to be able to be prepared for that battle, if it is to occur, is to know how it was defeated the first time. How can we avoid these things? And so I just think that it's very important to be aware of where you've come from and be knowledgeable about where you want to go or where we want to go as people.
Absolutely. Oh, so much richness in what you said, because we are actually repeating the cycle. And so it is a matter of, what did we miss? My generation, right? The ones under, what did we miss that we're starting to see some of these same things? Same question to you, Mr. Jones.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because Mr. Heath comes from a different background of teaching than I do when it comes to content area, right? So I come more from the STEM side, being a science teacher and how curriculum shows up. And so oftentimes when it comes to science, that race aspect and cultural aspect is not necessarily a part. So it's something that has to be embedded in your curriculum through planning and things like that. And so a lot of times what I don't like to do is I don't like to get into this piece of like the whole testing bias and all of those things and the way questions are asked to our students. And sometimes when those questions are asked, right, like there's bias in it because those are not the experiences.
Talk about it.
They don't come from those backgrounds that, you know, expose them to some of the scientific things that we see, right? Like, and so I've had to in the past, like, introduce these conversations through different opportunities with students. And the way I look at it is being just real, right? Because being a administrator, being a leader in a school, you don't just deal with them, you know, deal with students and scholars through academics.
Right.
You deal with them when it comes to behavioral challenges or family-based needs or whatever it may be. And so that's my time where I typically like to engage in those conversations and have those real reflective conversations about what this says about them and the way that people look at them from the outside looking in and how that affects them and how those cultural differences in the past are set up for them to fail in moments and how their behavior in that moment is also aligning to what people say about them.
Right.
So getting them to understand that, like, look, people are talking these things or saying these things about you. How are you going to change that narrative? And how are you going to change the behaviors that you are exhibiting in that moment?
I love that, Mr. Jones. Both of you, such powerful statements. And something that we have to, as parents, as educators, as leaders within the community, really think about. And that is something that I have been pushing for my audience for quite some time, even with families, of like, get involved, teach some of these things, a lot of these things at home, because within the school, like, they are beginning to remove a lot of different things out of the school. And if you don't have a base where you can say, or an educator or leaders who come in and say, hey, no, regardless, we're going to make sure we're doing right and talking the right things and saying the right things so that you're educated and can make well-informed decisions, then it becomes lost. And that is my fear, is are we losing our scholars? And with each new change, it becomes even more fearful, just like there's so much work that has to be done. And so parents, I hope you heard what they said. You're looking at two young Black educated men who are leaders within the school community, and you heard what they said. And so I hope you're taking that and just knowing turkeys, have those conversations at home as well. All right. Thank you. So, you know, leadership can be heavy. My goodness, leadership can be heavy. It's a lot of responsibility. It's a lot of long nights. It's a lot of weekends. It's a lot of times where, you know, you have to put aside your own wants and desires because you have to focus on making sure that scholars and teachers have what they need. And so as young professionals, right, how do you maintain a balance between your career and your personal life?
So I'll speak to that. My team, you know, in my school, they know, like, just how transparent I've been and accountable and reflective I've been just, like, over these last few months and summer. Transparently speaking, that's something that I've struggled with, like, historically when it comes to, like, balance and finding that work-life balance. And so I think where I'm at and what I've learned is, like, the best way to deal with it is, how do I prepare? How do I plan and set myself up for those successes? How do I not take things home with me and get things done in a space where they can be done and they can be handled, like, there, to not take that home with me? Because I feel like that's where the most imbalance I've had is not being prepared in moments and not making sure that I'm able, or I'm in a space where I can walk away from work at the end of the day and go home to my family and be fully present for them in that way. So to me, my response to that question would be just all around preparation and planning, and making sure that I'm organized in a way that allows for me to do so.
That's good. For all you future leaders, all of you who are like, hey, I want leadership, and you have a family, right? Listen to what Mr. Jones said, because it's very powerful. Preparation is everything. When I hear people ask me, Dr. Shepherd, how in the world are you a school principal, a single mom, an author, a speaker, two businesses, you're here, you're there, you're everywhere, it's preparation. It is actually time spent ensuring that things are done, most important things are done, so that I'm able to execute at a higher level and still be able to make sure that I'm putting in time for my family as well. And so he says something very powerful, preparation. You have to prepare. You have to prepare. Same to you, Mr. Heath.
I think mine is a little bit different. I don't have a family. So I'm typically here, but my principal will reach out at whatever time and say, hey, do this, and I can do that. I think my biggest struggle is with management of time is the mental capacity.
That's real.
So as a leader who is like a leader of people and who truly cares about kids, there will be nights that I know a specific kid is going through something, and I'll like have dreams, like I'm dreaming about work. And I'm dreaming about how I can support, or this issue is happening in this classroom with this teacher. Like, I actually have those dreams. And so for me, that means that I'm still bringing that home with me, like it's on my mind. And so I'm just trying to find ways to be able to make sure that I'm taking care of me, myself mentally, to make sure that when I am on the clock that I can give 100% of myself and not be drained. Because I think that's something that I've struggled with in the past is, I've continued to bring these things home, my mental, and now I'm drained on a day-to-day basis. So I just want to find better ways to take care of myself mentally, to be able to leave work at work when it's time to, and still care for people in the way that I want to care for people, but just making sure that I'm keeping myself in the headspace I need to be in.
That is so powerful, and I'm glad you brought that up, especially glad that to hear you say it, and you kind of alluded to it, even though you didn't directly name it, Mr. Jones, is about the mental and mental health. And I don't know how many of you remember a few months ago, it was heavy on me that we need to be praying for our men, right? We need to be praying for our men. And it is because sometimes, you know, the role is heavy, right? Especially if you're following biblical, you know, text of the role of the man or in the homes and in the communities. But mental health is so important, and we have to figure out ways, better ways to take care of ourselves, to check in on one another, to name the thing and say, hey, look, I'm tired. I'm not able to do that. And loving what Mr. Jones says about the preparedness so that you can do that, right? Because some people, not Mr. Heath, because he is very much so available whenever, like, no, okay, need this done. But just thinking about, like, if you know that that this is a goal that you want, if you know that leadership is what you want, not only do you need to be prepared, but setting your schedules and different things in a way that allows you to truly take care of your mental health. Name for people, I'm tired. I just can't do it. I do it for my team all the time. I don't have it. I just don't have it. And I love what we've built to be able to say that to one another and then say, you know what? All right, good. I got it. You don't have it today. I got it. Now, that's a bad feeling. Everybody ain't got it. That's something totally different. But that's for another day. All right, guys. So just thinking about where you are in education, how far, you know, how much things have changed. You even mentioned that in 7 years, things have changed. What changes would you like to see in the educational system to better support young Black leaders in education?
I have always been, let me make sure I say this correctly. I think in the African-American community, we like to, whether we do it intentionally or not, be extra hard on our own kind.
Yes.
So what I mean by that is, I feel like a lot of times people come into the schools assuming the worst, especially when the faces are similar to myself, Mr. Jones, Dr. Shepherd. And so what I would like to see is better support from our African-American families. And what that looks like for me is coming in proactively and not reactively. So like an open house situation, like, all right, I want to meet this person. I want to meet this person, get familiar with me prior to anything happening. And not, oh, I'm calling home saying, hey, like, this is happening with your child and you're coming up combative. And there's no relationship built. The best encounters that I've had with families are families who are involved. And we both can assume the best from each other. So, like, when you're coming in, we've already built this rapport. And when I do have to call you about something that might not be as positive, you already know my intention. We've already had those conversations, we've had positive conversations. And so it doesn't seem like we're going against each other. We know that we're working for the betterment of your child. So I would just like to see more collective accountability and more support from Black and brown families in the schools.
That's real. That's real. You heard what he said. More support from more of our Black and brown families. It is crucial, right? It is crucial, and it is a partnership. I've been saying it over for as long as I've had this podcast and even longer. It is a partnership. And you just heard it from another leader in education. It's a partnership. And so we have to figure out ways to work together. And it starts with, you know, how we're beginning to view things and changing that view. Same question to you, Mr. Jones.
And I just want to build on Mr. Heath's point and, like, just speak on trust and optimism. And when I think about, like, trust and optimism, you know, I think about the fact that, like, I am not here at this point to do any harm to my students, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm hopefully optimistic about the ability of our students. I'm hopefully optimistic about the ability of your child,
yes.
Right? And so, like Mr. He said, having that trust to know that,
mm-hmm,
and to understand that and take that with a, you know, with some form of love. And know that we are here to support. And like he said, we need that support back from you all, right? We need that support back from parents. Those are the best relationships that we have is when we work together, right? And I also would like to see those same things from the people higher up when it comes to, like, who, you know, who we are working with, right? There's nothing like a relationship, like, and I don't want to like make it seem as though relationships, like, only go as far as race, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is it plays a major part,
mm-hmm,
right, and how students feel when they are in a space, right? And so when students, like yesterday, we had an open house, and it was so powerful for me to look up, for me to hear a student say, what's up, coach, right?
Mm-hmm.
And for me to look up and see, like, this was a student that I didn't teach him, but I had coached him, right? And that's the first thing he said to me. And I looked up, and again, he's 6 foot something, right? And so that was like a moment of, like, to see him and to talk to him about, like, hey, yeah, I know you told me you wanted me to go to college, but if I didn't go to college, you know, go to trade school, do something. He's like, I think I'm going to school now to be an electrician, you know,
yes,
got to pick up a trade. And so, like, those are the moments that I'm talking about, like, we have to trust in, like, as parents and families, with our educators and our leaders. Like, listen, we may not be pushing them on, like, all of these different paths. We may not be pushing them directly to college, but those statements that I've made to that student, like, they resonate. He remembered those conversations, and he was able to name those things for me and come back to that, you know, yesterday. And so, like, I believe that. And I believe, especially, like, again, I want to stamp, like, the people above us, right? Like, the people who are in positions higher than myself and Mr. Heath, right? Like, you have to believe in the value of having two young Black men working with young Black students, right? And they don't get to see that often, right? And so for them to have that in the space that they have it in is super powerful. And that goes a long way when it comes to a lot of different things, academically, socially, emotionally, and culturally. And all of those things can have a bigger impact than what you may be teaching somebody academically in a classroom.
Woo! My goodness, bars.
You said something that kind of sparked something in me too. I don't know if it necessarily aligns with the question, but I think in our spaces too, like we're seeing school become like a checklist.
Right? Go there.
So what it means is my child has to come to school, but when we're sending home homework, oh, my child doesn't have time to do this homework. Or when the child is home, like they're babysitting, and I understand that there are situations and things that have to be done and families have bills that have to be paid. But what it does is it takes scholars out of the mindset of I can go to college, I can be successful, I can go to their friends. Because all they see themselves as now is like, all right, I'm going to school, whatever, but I have to go home and take care of this little sibling. I have to go home and cook. And whether people want to believe it or not, the habits that make us the adults that we are start back when we're in school. I struggle with procrastination at times because I was a procrastinator when I was in middle school. And so if these are the habits that we're building now and families and parents aren't supporting their children to take school seriously outside of the school, then where are they going to be in 10 to 15 years? And so I think that is something that also has to change. Like, parents have to be involved and have to pour into their kids in a way where they know that they want to be successful or they need to be successful.
And not even 10 to 15 years. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm thinking, like, we work in middle school, right? Mm-hmm. I'm thinking about in the next 2 to 3 years. Mm-hmm. And at high school, that's responsibilities right. are different, right? That's because right. the expectations in high schools look completely different than they do mm-hmm. in middle school, mm-hmm. right? And responsibilities, like, when it comes to assignments and all of those things.
Yeah.
Because we're supposed to be preparing them for that moment to go to high school.
Right.
And high school is supposed to be preparing them for that moment to go to college.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so that timeline that Mr. Heath spoke about, he talked about 10 to 15 years, which is an adult trajectory. But we're talking about even a young adult trajectory when they get to high school and in college. Those habits that they are building right now in these moments and those mindsets are directly impacting their next 2 to 3 years.
Woo, bars, y'all. They just spit some major truth, and I hope you grab hold of it, because everything that they said is right. It absolutely does start at home, and school does begin to feel like a checklist at times. And when you talk to scholars who become unmotivated, and then they give you all the things that are going on, and then you're, you know, that educator or leader trying to, you know, build them back up, but then they go back home and they lose it, and now they're back, and it becomes so much of a tug of war, a push and pull, when, you know, if we were working together, you know, we would be able to just keep pouring, because what they get is what come out. And Mr. Heath said something that was very powerful, because how you start there typically are those habits that show up as adults, right? I talked a lot then. Guess what? I still talk a lot now. You know, it didn't go anywhere, right? But then just thinking about some of the other habits, you know, good or bad, that have stayed along with me at 46 based on what happened then. So thank you for both of you for uplifting that. And we're coming down to our last two questions, guys. I know. Don't cry. I know. This has been very, very, very good. Aside, but they're kind of the same but different. So what has been the best piece of advice you've received as a young leader in education? The best piece of advice you've received? And this is the question they need to think time. I can start. I know something that I received, and it actually came from he was my sixth grade science teacher, but he ended up being a teammate, and that was just like such a like surreal moment to be able to work with someone that was once my teacher. And I used to just ask for permission to do everything. Oh, can I do this? Can I do this? And I remember when I received my first no, and I was so upset because I believed the project was going to change the school, do so many things. And he came to me after school, and he said, "It is better to ask for forgiveness than it is to ask for permission." And I said, "Oh, you know what?" And guess what? I've been interrupting tables with that ever since. For 19 years, that has stuck with me. And I do. I didn't. My bad. I apologize. Right? So it's better to ask for forgiveness than it is to ask for permission. So that was mine.
I think mine would be, and I can't pinpoint where it came from, but leadership never stops. When you are who you are, you're that person wherever you go.
That's right.
And so as a 29-year-old, that gets difficult because, of course, I want to live life, do the things, enjoy myself, and have a good time. But I have to be aware, and I was reminded of that this year, you have to be aware that no matter if you're in the school building, if you're in uniform, whatever, if you have the badge on or not, you are still that leader. And you have to show yourself as that leader because consequences ensue if you don't. People are looking at you. People are waiting to see you mess up. And kids are looking to see how you're going to respond when you do mess up. So it's super important to just be the leader that you are in every space that you enter.
That's good.
So in the spirit of transparency, which is a line I've been using a lot this summer, Dr. Shepherd is my coach, right? And has been my coach for a long time. And one of the things, like, it goes back to one of my earlier responses was, like, you are who you are. Like, you know who you are, right? And so never doubt that. And so your work speaks for itself. And that's something that she had to remind me of, like, multiple times as I would question myself about, like, should I be doing this or should I not be? Am I ready or am I not, right? She would remind me that there are things that people can't take away from you that you've done, right?
Right.
And so that would be my piece. And that's something, like, I give her a lot of credit for my own development and where I am today. And so I did want to just give that moment of gratitude and that moment of shine there when it came to that. So that's the biggest thing for me, is just, like, remembering, like, who I am, remembering, like, the work that I've done. And again, there's so many things that I can speak to that I've done that have had a major impact on our school and our community that don't necessarily have my name on it.
That's right.
Right. But I still see students who have benefited from those things, like walking through our buildings, right? Yeah. I see the benefits of the things that I put into motion or I set into place that have affected students and still affect students at our school today.
Yes.
And so, like, that's where I have to remind myself. It's like, again, I am who I am. Like, I've done that work and I have to believe in myself the way that others have believed in me.
Absolutely. She Leads Educational Coaching. That is also my other business. So make sure you go to that website, www.arisenowllc.com, and sign up for a consultation so that I can also help you lead. All right. That was my shameless plug. Okay. So last question. If you could give one piece of advice to another young Black educator or aspiring assistant principal, what would it be?
Mine would be lock in, do the work, get your credentials. All right. I work in a space where I didn't necessarily need the credentials. Right. But I also didn't want to be in a space where anybody could ever tell me that I wasn't qualified.
Come on.
Right? And so, in me doing so, I technically am more qualified than some others. Right? And so, I would tell those people aspiring, like, to be principals or assistant principals to make sure that they have their ducks in a row. Same way that somebody told me to make sure I have my ducks in a row. And I've done that, right? And so, again, that's something that nobody can ever take away from me, right? Again, my students perform the way that they have performed year over year. And that's great, right? But again, it's those things that people can't take away from me, which is the work that I put in to receive my licensure and to make sure that I am, you know, in the position that I need to be.
That's right.
My advice is a little more cliche and is go with whatever the data tells you to do. I think a lot of times this field allows for a lot of opinions and feelings, and I've been prone to some of those myself. But at the end of the day, we're here for one goal, and when you do aspire to get that job, you're going to be judged off of these numbers. And so whatever the numbers are saying, make the adjustments that you need to make based on those numbers. Try not to get your feelings involved too much. Try not to have too many opinion-based conversations. Do what you know that you're there to do and respond to the data.
Thank you so much for that. That is good. Both of y'all, that was really good. My advice, it is going to be to have your ducks in a row, to make sure that you position yourself so that no one, you don't pigeonhole, don't ever pigeonhole yourself. And education can become that place where you do, because you get comfortable. And you don't ever want to get too comfortable, right? I push and say get as many certifications as you can. You might like the place that you're working at now. You may not in 5 years, because we evolve, right? And desires and different things that, you know, you want change, and that's okay. Make sure you've positioned yourself to be able to go with the change, right? I would also encourage to sit at the feet of those who have done it before you. As a coach myself, I also have a coach. I have a mentor. I have my apostle who, yes, everything she does, I'm at her feet learning. Everything my mentor does and talks about as a coach, I'm at her feet learning. Not literally at her feet, but I'm in the meetings, I'm in the sessions, I'm showing up, because I always say it, every coach needs a coach. But also, I want to know. I want to learn from the mistakes that you made so I know not to do it. When I leave, right, the school is going to be in a great position. It's already in a good position to take new leadership. And because I know that, they've sat at my feet. They've taken in everything. Learn from the mistakes, right? Be better, right? I know that it's going to be better, okay? And so that would be my advice. Like, don't count it. Don't look at somebody. Oh, they younger than me. Who they think they are telling me? Well, maybe if you want leadership, they're in a great position to tell you. I don't care how old you are, right? We just got to be willing to be mentored, to be coached, to be led. You know, one thing about it, Mr. Jones, like when I have to say some tough stuff, you know what he says? Respect. It's never, well, let me tell you why I did. You know, it's never that. It's respect. And then it's, I know he got a whole new game plan about how things are going to go. And I can appreciate that. Leaders are watching. And that's my last piece of advice. And I think Mr. Jones wants to say something else, but people are always watching. I got in leadership not because I was out here applying and doing this, that, and the third, because they were watching. They were always watching, and I was welcome to it. I was open to it. Back to what Mr. He said, once you are in education, you're already a mentor whether you want to be or not. You are a mentor the moment you enter into education. Your life really doesn't become your own. Truth be told, your life ain't your own anyway. It belongs to the Lord our Savior. But I digress. But it isn't. And so you have to be careful how you show up into spaces, right? But when people are coming in to visit, don't shut off. Oh, I don't want nobody in my classroom. Oh, okay, then. Well, somebody give you a task. That's too much. I don't want to do that. I don't feel like it. Because people are testing. Sometimes it's just a test, just to see what your willingness is. Because leadership is hard work, and it does not end at 5 o'clock, 2:30, 3:45, right? And until people get that on the deep down. And it's also not just telling people what to do. It's servant work. And a lot of people miss that. And so if you want to do it, my advice, position yourself to do it and remember why you are doing it. You had something you wanted to add, Mr. Jones?
Yeah, I just wanted to add that it's going to, like, in order for you to get to the place that you want to get, it's going to take sacrifice. Like, it is going to take sacrifice, right? There were times where I had to give up that moment that most teachers feel like is a break in order to develop my leadership abilities.
Come on.
And so speaking and building on to what she was talking about, mm-hmm. when she talked about like sitting at the feet, is like, again, and people, you have to be okay with people talking about you.
You have to be.
People gonna talk about you. They gonna say, oh, they're sucking up. Oh, they're, you know, kissing. They're doing whatever, right? Like to get to where they want to go. And again, that's how they look at it, because that's a mindset thing, right? Mm-hmm. But the truth is I'm just trying to learn,
mm-hmm.
right? I'm just trying to figure out like what it is that they're doing. And again, at the end of the day, like you want to be around like-minded people. And so I used to say this all the time. And I would say it to Mr. Heath and like people who were on my team. I would say things like, again, I love y'all, but y'all, we on the same playing field. Y'all can't get me here.
Come on.
Only the people there can get me there.
Come on.
So I need to be listening to them. I need to be sitting with them. I need to be at the table with them.
Come on.
I'll be at the table with y'all now. You know, it's fun.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But there's more on a different table that I need to get to. Right? And so that is the thing. Like, there's sacrifice that's going to happen. And in that sacrifice, people are going to talk about you. People are going to say all of these things. But it is what it is. And then the last thing is, I just wanted to add too, is like, to that sacrifice piece, leaders eat last. Right?
Yes. Come on, book.
Leaders eat last. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And when I say that, like, I mean just the fact of like, it's going to be hard. There are going to be moments where you have to, at all times, you have to put others before yourself when it comes to leadership, right? And so that's just what I want to leave people with at the end of the day.
Yes.
Sacrifice and leaders eat last.
Yes, thank you so very much. Y'all, I hope you enjoyed this as much as I did. This was really powerful, really enlightening, and needed, right? So needed. And so I definitely want to thank all of you for tuning in with us. Thank you so much, Mr. Jones, for being on the show tonight. Thank you so much, Mr. Heath, for being on the show tonight. And guess what? We have more special guests to come, y'all. I told you what this month was going to be. So, this is your girl, Dr. Shepherd, and this has been another note from the principal's desk. Stay tuned. Come on back with me next Friday, and we'll get down to another topic. Peace.